You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, everybody, David here, and we have wrapped up our regular episode coverage of Andor, but we still have a few things that we want to get produced for everyone. This is going to be a severed podcast. So the first part of this is going to be for everyone, and then there'll be a back half where it will be available just for season pass and regular subscribers. This is a conversation with Matt Cavanaugh. He's a retired lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Army. He was deployed multiple times. He served at West Point, taught strategy, military strategy. He is a writer, and he's been involved in a couple of books, Winning Westeros, How Game of Thrones Explains Modern Military Conflict, as well as How Star Wars, Strategy Strikes Back, How Star Wars Explains Modern Military Conflict. He's also written a new book recently. He'll talk about that in the recording. And I first originally heard Matt talking with Anthony on Anthony's Electric Boogaloo podcast, talking about military matters in the Westeros world. And so we've had a couple of conversations with Matt over the years. He is a keen historian with lots of great insights and is somebody who's just really good to hang out with and good to talk with these kinds of things. And because this is the war in Star Wars, so to speak, I thought it was appropriate that we have a conversation with him. I had an early conversation with him in after the first drop of episodes, and then we just couldn't make life schedules work. We had intended to talk a couple of times during the course of the season, but it just didn't work out. So this is the longer version of that intended conversation. So we'll get into that in just a moment. A couple of things that I want to bring up. If you haven't checked out the Dune Minute podcast, definitely do that. I'm going to be guesting all this upcoming week, so that'll be the week of May 26th, 2025. I'm going to be spending 5 minutes of my time with those guys talking about the naming ceremony that happens in the Denis Villeneuve movie Dune Part 2. Big lover of the Dune property, and they were gracious enough to invite me onto their podcast. We did a couple of joint podcasts with them for Dune Prophecy. Alicia will be joining them later in the season as well. And if you haven't heard them, they go minute by minute. They did the first film, Dune movie. Now they're doing the second. It's a really fun podcast. They literally go from minute to minute, and then they dive deep and they look at some of the books and the encyclopedias and from the original works and talk about what we see on screen. So I was able to join them. So that was a lot of fun. Check that out. For Andor coverage, we have still to come. John, Alicia, and I are going to do our sort of wrap up and roundtable. That'll be coming later this week. That'll be public for everyone. I'm going to try to convene all of the co-pilots who flew with us over the course of the season. We span like 7 different time zones, so that's kind of a bit of a scheduling work that I have to do to make that happen, but that is in process. And then I have another interview coming up. If you haven't heard the Going Rogue podcast, definitely check that out. Tansy Gardam, who is a film critic, and she's worked in the industry. She's in Australia. She did a 6-part series on how Rogue One got made. It is an incredibly well-researched and incredibly well-produced podcast, highly recommended. She was gracious enough to agree to come on to the Lorehounds, so we're going to have a conversation. And again, we're going to do that one severed. We're going to talk about Andor writ large and how it affects the Star Wars property and a bunch of other stuff. And then we'll have a subscriber-only bonus material where she and I are going to get really nerdy and talk about shot composition and costuming and script writing and a whole bunch of other stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that conversation. We also have our subscriber bonus material, 11zs, which is our movie club. We're going to be talking about A Real Pain. We'll be recording that soon, as well as our Second Breakfast coverage. John and I are finishing up our Last of Us coverage. We're at the penultimate. I think that's episode 6. We're about to record that in just a few minutes. Doctor Who is wrapping up. They have been covering that. That's been going really strong. Murderbot, John and Alicia are covering that episode to episode. And then we have podcasts out for Thunderbolts and Sinners as well. So definitely go back and check those if you have not yet seen the movie. We got you covered. There's a lot more coming up in the summer. I'm not going to get into it all. Just stay tuned and we'll let you know what we've got coming. Otherwise, thanks very much. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Matt Cavanaugh. Matt, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. We had some plans earlier in the season, maybe to talk a little bit more frequently, but boy, life is sure busy, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And finishing the series was so great in the sense that I felt like I was watching a chessboard assembling and I knew where the board was going to get to.
Right.
I just didn't know which, how the pieces were going to jump to get into place.
Yeah, the moves. And then there's an advantage to the compressed schedule and the sensibility that they brought to the each year as a different arc and 3 episodes per. But for us in the podcasting and TV reaction and analysis business, it was hard. It was really tough because, and we did it. We did as a lot of listeners know, we did a sort of a squadron style where each of the 3 of us, we tried to mirror the what Gilroy did, where the 3 of the main hosts each week took on a different episode with different co-hosts. So that way the burden didn't fall on anyone, but which meant that for me, and I was bringing up the anchor episode every week, I had to watch all 3 episodes and then dive into my episode. And it was a lot. But we made it through. We made it through. Before we get into our conversations, I wanted to give you a quick opportunity. You've just written a new book now, yeah. and I'll have set us up in the introduction with some of your other written materials. But you've got a new book that's just coming out now, and I thought, well, if you're going to take some time to come visit us, at least give you the opportunity to share what you just. Is it out now?
It's pre-order right now. So if folks that are interested in how strategy reflects the real world, Strategy Strikes Back, How Star Wars Explains Modern Military Conflict, that's out. You can purchase it and order it and have it to yourself in the next 24 hours.
Right.
The other book that's launching a little bit later this year that's on pre-order is called Best Scar Wins: How You Can Be More Than You Were Before. Mm. And it's about my experience donating a kidney,
right,
and then going on to running basically the toughest self-supported ultra marathon series in the world through deserts and scorpions all the way to Antarctica and penguins, where I won the longest and toughest ultra marathon on Antarctica in 2022. And it's all in service of showing what can be done after kidney donation, that you can donate a kidney, you can save someone's life, and you can go back to doing whatever the heck it is you love doing, whether it's running ultra marathons or breaking down Andor season 2.
It definitely was not a Antarctic marathon. I don't think I could compare it. But as Yoda would say, the size of the thing doesn't matter. It's the fact that, what you're applying to your...
to the moment.
Right? That's right. I've been to Hoth and it kind of sucked and I'm glad to be home.
Very good. Really quick too, I noticed, do you still write your Substack strategy notes?
I paused it because I've moved on to be a contributor for the Los Angeles Times.
Oh, okay.
So I'm writing about more topical issues, frankly, but still writing nonetheless. So
that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
So I'm really curious, just as a piece of media and entertainment, obviously you have, you know, you used to teach at the War College. You were at West Point, right?
Yep.
And you've had all the experiences that you've had. And so we're going to talk about a bunch of that and what you see in the show. But what did you think of just as a piece of television, just as a piece of media, as a four-part movie in 4 weeks?
So it's really satisfying. I've used the phrase the last time I think we talked, they put the war in Star Wars, in the sense that as a viewer, I love lightsabers and the idea that you can take down the opposition with one clever blast.
Right.
But that's not real.
Right.
And it never was real, and it never will be real. And I also enjoy, you know, in addition to the flipping and when Yoda fights, in addition to that stuff, I like to see what it really feels like on screen, because in the modern world, you know, it used to be that something like 50 or 60% of us used to have to be farmers to sustain the human population.
Right.
Just as agriculture has shot way down to less than 1%, less than 1% of us puts a uniform on and deploys overseas, for example,
right,
of whatever flag or country that we fight for. And there's a distance between those of us that have been through some of those experiences and the rest of us. And let me just say clearly, that doesn't make us special or better. It just makes us unique. And it means that we have to work a little bit harder to help others to see what it's like, so that those other educated members of the democracy that we're a part of can make wise decisions when they're voting for candidates or whether to go fight somewhere.
Right.
Because it does take a real cost. And I really appreciated that at the highest level from this series, that they did fairly well at showing what that highest cost feels like.
Right, right. And a lot of the nuances and more subtler aspects of what it is to commit yourself to a grand objective.
Yeah. It's scary. I was scared. So the first time I went to war, I was in my early 20s, and I was a lieutenant, and I was in charge of other people with the highest costs and highest consequences. And I didn't do everything right. And on some level, at the age of 45 now, I look back and I recognize that we put some of the highest burdens on the youngest and least mature members of our society.
Right.
So some of the stupid stuff that you saw in this series, for example, like some of that crazy fighting on Yavin where
the Maya Pay Brigade.
Yeah. Like that's kind of real. I mean, it's not, you know, like in the real world, it's way less funny and, you know, way more scary. But I appreciated that reverberation or that echo from reality.
Did the and I'm not sure what you're writing for the LA Times, but in terms of, I don't know if you're doing entertainment criticism or anything like that, but as a consumer of media, I'm curious, did the structure, the release structure, work for you in terms of the three episodes and not waiting week to week and watching the show for 12 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, there's debates over that, like as a financial or practical matter, but I felt like they did a good job of showing key points along the way. When I've thought back, so the book that's out later this year, Best Scar Wins, about my kidney donation in those races, there's no accurate way of going back and reflecting on a past experience in great detail. The best you can hope to capture is those wave points, those high points and those low points. And then you hope that the resulting connect the dots trajectory tells a good story along the way. Mm-hmm. So I can see why they chose that. And I think it's, I think as a viewer, it was really fun for me.
Right. Great. There are so many things to talk about around this show. I really feel that this show is a bit of a black swan event, right? It's a kind of a one of one in many ways. And part of what adds to that sensibility for me is this idea of like, you know, well, what is art and is this art? And on our Discord and in our feedback emails and in my conversations with other people who are watching the show, both critically and just for entertainment, the show is hitting on so many different levels and speaking to so many things. And even in one episode, there's so much that's encapsulated. Yeah. And when your head and your heart and your eyes and your ears are all going in different directions, and you as a person are really, you know, it's evocative in so many ways. That's for me really where this sort of elevates, the show is really elevated to just, it's not just The Pit or Poker Face or something else that's on TV that's fun and entertaining, but it's really impactful. And I can't imagine, say, somebody with your historical background in terms of teaching and, you know, and obviously researching and reading and writing and all those kinds of things, there must be like, your mind must have been jumping around all over the place in terms of modern human history, different military structures, different political leaders, yeah, different choices that people make during wartime or peacetime or the lead up or the post of war. I'm curious as to maybe what are two or three of your big, yeah, things that you saw or latched onto as you're watching these 12 episodes.
I'll start with two that relate to Luthen because, okay, you know, in a lot of ways, I feel like he's maybe not the headline character, but the central figure in so many other ways. Mm-hmm. I see him as almost like a John Brown of the rebellion. And when I say John Brown, I mean the John Brown from the American Civil War in May of 1856. The Potawatomi massacre. He's a radical abolitionist that killed five people with swords in order to bring attention to the cause of abolition. And then in 1859, he led a raid on Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. You know, before going on that raid, that mission, he had met with many members of the abolitionist high society, to include William Lloyd Garrison, Henry David Thoreau, for example, to fundraise, to raise money. It was not a successful mission, obviously. They killed seven and injured 10. And he was caught by one Colonel Robert E. Lee of the United States Army. This is in, again, October of 1859. Historians have referred to John Brown as the meteor of the Civil War, in the sense,
as in like the astronomical event, like the, yeah, the thing streaking through the sky.
He brought attention to the issues and gave rise to the fears that people had, and in a lot of ways helped, was one of the cogs in the wheel that brought us closer to war. And I feel like Luthen very much is that figure on screen. He, you know, John Brown is a very, you know, he pushes people in different directions, okay, for some of his ideas and thoughts, just like the Unabomber does, frankly. And there's, mm-hmm, been a weird resurgence of the Unabomber. But I think in a lot of ways, Luthen is that figure, in this story. And the second one is that quote that I had to rewind it and watch it again and write it down and watch it again. We fight to win. That means we lose and lose and lose and lose until we're ready. And then, you know, just a moment later, hide your hate until you know what to do with it. Mm. So the other book that I'm working on right now is titled Who Wins Wars? And it's getting inside the minds of great general officers. And one of them that I'm crawling into in the book is General George Washington.
Okay.
We are living through the 250th anniversary right now of the things that made George Washington famous. In June of 1775, at the age of 43, he took command of the Continental Army.
So I'm like in my mid-50s. I can't imagine taking command of an army yet in my 40s.
Believe me, I feel the exact same way. Ulysses S. Grant was in his early 40s when he took command of all Union armies.
Oh, and, my Lord.
Washington is, in many ways, to me, an impressive figure, but for no greater reason than this. He lost. He's maybe one of the losingest tactical generals that we've ever had.
Okay.
But he won the war that gave this country its birth. He protected the country in its crib, in the cradle. And I see the same sensibility, the same restraint in Luthen. So there's a moment in, I'm going to take everybody back very, I'm going to do this very briefly, but in 1776, in June and July of 1776, the British Army has sent an invasion force of 42,000 troops and sailors and Hessians across the Atlantic Ocean.
Putting 40,000 human beings and the material and everything, the machine, you know, all the machine of war on boats, wooden boats, and sending them across the Atlantic. That is an undertaking in and of itself.
400 ships. So if you do the math,
yeah,
that invasion force today relative to the American public,
yeah,
would be almost 6 million troops descending on New York Harbor. Washington loses and loses and loses and has the restraint to make organized withdrawals all the way across New York. And your listeners will know the story that on Christmas Day of 1776.
Well, we do have a global story. I mean, a global listening audience. So, okay. Yeah, so, not everybody will.
So they lose and they lose and they lose until they finally counterattack on Christmas Day in Trenton, New Jersey, and then followed up in Princeton, New Jersey. And it's really that moment because the Continental Army's enlistments are almost up. Basically, the Continental Army was almost nothing. And it isn't until those victories that the unity of the rebellion held and cohered. And so I'm listening to Luthen say those words. We fight to win. That means we lose and lose and lose and lose until we're ready. And I'm mapping that directly onto the things that I'm reading that George Washington is writing 250 years ago today. And I see those same echoes. You know, again, history doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme. And it even rhymes when it's on screen and Tony Gilroy is show running. So I really appreciated that aspect of the story.
It's fascinating because from a genre perspective, here we are, Star Wars, one of the biggest and most well-known global stories that spans, you know, it spans all of our modern cultures, right? You can go anywhere in this world. My daughter knows what stormtroopers and Darth Vader were when she was like 4 or 5, and she had never seen any of the movies. She just has an impression of what they are. She, you know, she hears Darth Vader's breathing. She's like, oh, that's Darth Vader. How? Right? Like it's one of the biggest stories. And then so for somebody like Gilroy and the writers that he worked with to be able to synthesize a very, very deeply human story and then encapsulate it into this science fiction world and have that resonate so profoundly within the confines of the Star Wars lore and structure, it's a pretty amazing feat But what I think my point is that that's what we want is human stories that we can see and we can resonate. And yeah, I don't know much about John Brown at all.
Yeah.
You know, or some of the deeper history of George Washington, but I can understand and see and feel that just because I've never served in, you know, the military, and to feel that and to resonate it.
What you were describing with your daughter, for example, I think of Star Wars as the universal war.
Right.
It's one that everybody has some point of connection with. And by extension of that, you know, we can see humanity through that. We can see the human experience of what this actually means and the costs and the consequences. In a lot of ways, like all those data points that I pick up by virtue of my background,
right,
are kind of unimportant.
Right.
What matters is, and you've heard this phrase before, but the, you know, conveying some truth to the audience.
Right.
And I'm grateful that even if someone doesn't see John Brown or George Washington in Luthen, they do see those aspects of right. what the real world is really like. And I think that's the most important part. Like that's right. the thing that I'm hoping audiences are nodding their heads at or shaking their heads at or reacting to in some way.
I'm going to be interviewing another film critic, Tansy Gardam. She's down in Australia, and she produced this really amazing podcast called Going Rogue, and she does it. It's a 6-part breakdown of how Going Rogue was produced and released and all of the ins and outs. It's incredibly researched. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she throws out a line. I think it's in one of her later podcasts. I can't remember now because it's all a blur. But she uses the term Schrodinger's allegory. So you're talking about everyone's war. Star Wars is everyone's war. And that's when we have this richness that we can just map ourselves onto. And again, that's where I go back to this point that this is art. This is elevated to art. Because we can do that mapping, or we can be, you know, reflective of these deeper themes and feelings that we're seeing on screen. I heard Tony Gilroy say he wasn't writing the script, you know, however many few years ago, with a newspaper in his hand, trying to write to the modern current news cycle. He was just trying to tell a very deeply a deep story about rebellion and control and authority and the personal costs of these things. Mm-hmm. And current circumstances be damned, he's just focused on writing his story. Yeah. And then of course we're all going, oh my gosh, that, you know, we can see these modern, these today parallels that are chilling and disturbing. And again, he's not writing with that in mind. He's just writing to write.
Yeah. I mean, on some level, these things are always going to converge in the sense that there is no higher price or higher stakes for us than death or right. the willingness to trade what little breath you have left for some idea or cause. And so whether it's the Civil War or the American War of Independence or and the wider rebellion. I mean, of course, there's going to be a convergence in the way that these stories fold together in some ways, and you know, whether intentional or not. You know,
maybe it's the force moving us through okay. all these right. things.
Boy, I could use some of the force. You know, like I mean, it's I've always had this like love. Hate sort of sense about the idea that you can have an all-powerful weapon and you can defeat it with some sort of perfect, you know, laser blast,
right.
you know, like perfect shot. And in a lot of ways, I wish that were the case, but it's, you know, it's just not. And that's why I appreciated this series so much. Even as much as I appreciated the other right. more fantastical parts of the series.
And I think that's an interesting, again, where we can resonate with these different things. A New Hope released in 1977 is a mytho-historic, it's a mytho-heroic tale. Yeah. It's a fairy tale. It's rescue, you know, part of it is rescuing the princess from the dragon in some ways. And they get medals and everybody's happily ever after, which is why Empire is so beloved by so many people, is because you wake up the next morning and there's a reality that you have to face, and there's a cost that you have to, you've had to pay for putting that, you know, having that medal ceremony.
Yep.
But we still want those mytho-historic stories.
Yeah.
We still want to look up and see those big two-dimensional, bigger than life sort of things. And we got a great piece of feedback from somebody, from one of our Discord users, I believe it was Anguilupin, talking about the Tolkien concepts of hope, the Amdir and Estelle, and I'll probably get them backwards. But anyway, one is hope that's based on reality, like, hey, I can see the dawn is coming. Mm-hmm. I can see that, you know, the truck, or the plane delivering the needed supplies is flying overhead. And then there's the hope where, if we go to Lord of the Rings, where Sam and Frodo are, you know, in the Dark Lands, and there is no hope. They're lost. They've got Gollum with them. They don't know where they're going. It's horrible days and days of journey with no potential resolution in sight. And yet they continue to go on. I kind of forgot my point. I think I just got lost in the moment here.
But I think, you know, I've thought about this actually quite a bit. Within the uniform military and folks with short haircut crowd, right. There's a phrase that hope is not a strategy. Mm-hmm. The idea that you cannot rely entirely on hope
right.
to win the day. And that's true. But without hope, there is no strategy, because if you don't believe that something will occur, if you don't believe that you can thread that needle, that you can, I mean, if we go all the way back, actually, no, I'm thinking wrongly. If we go forward to Rogue One,
right.
You know, that plan that we see on screen is basically a string of miracles held together by hope. And that's actually another phrase that where each independent step on the ladder to getting the plans for the Death Star exfiltrated relies on sort of a Hail Mary or a little bit of divine intervention. That's true in the real world too. I mean, you have to have a series of breaks that go your way, whether it's a political campaign, a business strategy, a hockey game, whatever.
A broadcast. A television show.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so I do think hope is an element that, hell, hope is our force on some level. I mean, it's the one thing that kind of holds it all together in the end, even when there's no cause for it.
So I think we're going to take a break here, and subscribers and season pass holders, we're going to continue the conversation. Before we started recording, we started talking about some ideas of personal cost, it being involved in a rebellion or any service of this kind, or devoting yourself to a bigger cause. We talked about this paradoxical idea that strength is weakness, and this idea of losing to win, right? And then there's just a whole bunch of fascinating historical rhymings that you also mentioned before. So we're going to get into a lot more of that, and I'm really curious to dig a little deeper into some of the military parallels as well. And I think that's something that is infused throughout all of Star Wars and doesn't get talked about. We talk a lot about the lightsabers and the cool spaceships, but actually talking about how are revolutions built and how do these different kinds of forces engage with each other, and how do these kinds of things resolve? So I think we're going to get into a much more deeper conversation of that. So if you're going to leave us here, then thanks for listening, and we appreciate you coming around. And I'll drop in with a little outro here in just a moment with some upcoming news on what's going on the Lorehounds. Thanks again, Matt, for being here. And we'll talk again. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did.
And a reminder that a more complete conversation is available for subscribers and season pass holders. You can become a subscriber today. Just go to the link tree in the show notes and you have your choice. You can do Patreon or Supercast. We have annual memberships as well, and we provide a little discount for those. So those are nice if you don't want those recurring charges, but you want to just pay it for everything out front. And if you don't want to do any subscriptions, we totally get that. And if you just want a one-time purchase, you can get the season pass, and that's only 10 bucks. So look for those links there. Again, it helps us. It helps all of our co-hosts and all of our co-pilots for this season. We make sure that they are able to participate in that as well. And it just, you know, keeps the lights on and keeps the bits flowing. Quick notes about a couple of things upcoming. And let me just circle back around and replug Matt's books. You can find his two previous books, Strategy Strikes Back, How Star Wars Explains Modern Military Conflict, and Winning Westeros, How Game of Thrones Explains Modern Military Conflict. He's an editor on both of those. And then he has his upcoming book, Best Scar Wins. And I believe he's got even another book in the pipeline there. So he's a pretty prolific writer. So keep an eye out for him. Notes about our upcoming schedule on the Lorehounds. John, Alicia, and I are recording our wrap-up and roundtable for Andor. I think we're doing that tomorrow at the relative to the time of this recording. And then I'm going to get together with all of the co-pilots at some point. We've got 7 time zones to span, but we want to hear from every single one of them because they brought so much to the conversation. And I really want to get their wrap-up thoughts. And then after that, I think I've got one more interview with Tansy Gardam, who is the publisher or producer of Going Rogue, a podcast. It started out as a 6-episode detailed examination. Let me tell you, this thing is research to the hilt. It is an amazing, she's done an amazing job, but all about how the original Rogue One was produced. And then from there, she sort of springboarded into doing other film criticism and examination. She also has a Patreon, so check that out if you want some of her bonus material. But she and I will be talking. We're going to do another severed podcast. We're going to do part public and part bonus material. On the public, we're going to talk about our general takes and our thoughts about the industry and about how Andor is going to affect that industry. And then for the subscribers, we're going to get real nerdy. We've each picked out 3 aspects of the Andor production, and we're going to get down into the weeds and really get into stuff like shot composition and lens choice and how costuming decisions were made and script writing, examining the scripts in real detail. So I'm super excited for that because as an armchair film guy or, you know, production guy, I get to talk to somebody who really knows what they're talking about with this stuff because she's worked in the industry. So I'm, as you can tell, excited. Otherwise, we just recorded our 11Zs, which is our subscriber movie club. We covered A Real Pain, wonderful film. We had a really good conversation. We've got Second Breakfast coming up, and then we're going to do another 11Zs movie club. This time, we're going to do a Gene Hackman retrospective, a little film festival looking at the life of Gene Hackman. And we've already picked our, relative to the recording, we've already picked our 3 films. And it's going to be The French Connection, Night Moves, and Heist. And subscribers, regular monthly subscribers, get access to the voting booth for that and access to those podcasts. John and I are finishing up our coverage of The Last of Us. We just had episode 6. Alicia and John with Ian, who sometimes pops in his TARDIS, are finishing up Doctor Who. And apparently there's some big stuff that just broke with that. They did a whole thing where they brought in some major lore from an original series. So that sounds really exciting. Murderbot is running. People are enjoying it. John and Alicia are going to be covering that episode to episode. We have podcasts out on Thunderbolts and Sinners. Alicia has conversation with John about Thunderbolts, and it sounds like it's a pretty impactful film. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And I still haven't seen Sinners, and I really am dying to listen to the podcast with Anthony, John, and Alicia talking about it because it sounds like an amazing movie. And those are 3 great people I would love to hear talk about the film. We have a ton more coming up this summer. Hopefully we'll have a chance to catch a little bit of a breather, but we've got Marvel movies coming out. We've got some cool television shows. We've got some Alien and Predator stuff going on, The Bear. So we're going to be here for all of it. And your subscription support really helps us be able to accomplish that. And the more time that we can dedicate to this, you know, the better products we can make. And that all stems from having Cornerstone subscribers. And if you can't subscribe, it's totally cool. And we appreciate you here. And that's why we have the public ad supported channel. So, all right, I'm going to shut up and get out of here. And again, thank you so much. Thanks to everyone for your support. And I hope you enjoy this conversation. And we will next Andor podcast that will be out will be John, Alicia, and I a little bit later this week. Until then, may the Force be with us all.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback to StarWars@TheLorehounds.com and get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at Patreon or Supercast. Connect with us on Blue Sky. Links for everything in the episode show notes. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.